Incorporated on Tuesday, May 7th at the Best Western in Sheridan.
This is Kim Love. I have the good news many of you have been waiting for. Frackleton's will be reopening as soon as possible. The biggest thing slowing down our reopening will be our ability to staff the restaurant. So if you are interested in working for Frackleton's or know of anyone who would be interested, please stop by the Country Bounty offices at 303 South Main or email your resume to kimlove@sheridanmedia.com. Look forward to having Frackleton's back better than ever.
Mark April 26th on your calendars for something truly special. Join Compass Center for Families at the historic Sheridan Inn for the annual Light of Hope Breakfast, a gathering of hearts and hands dedicated to making a difference in Sheridan County. This year, they are recognizing the Sheridan County YMCA as their champion for children. And the best part, it's absolutely free. RSVP by calling Compass Center for Families or emailing Andrea at compass4families.org.
Have you been into Connect Home Center and seen their store remodel? You'll be inspired with all their new displays. And Connect is now an authorized Marvin window dealer. As part of their remodel celebration, you can enter the Connect Home Center Spring Sweepstakes for a chance to win a $300 Connect gift card. Enter for a chance to win on the contest page at SheridanMedia.com now through April 26th. And swing by Connect Home Center at 1836 South Sheridan Avenue in Sheridan for all your spring projects.
The Bighorn Home Builders Home and Garden Show was another huge success, thanks in part to all the vendors and the community. First Federal was proud to be a major sponsor again. We hope you got a lot of ideas for this spring and summer. Let the team at First Federal Bank and Trust help you achieve your dream of home ownership. We offer a variety of loan programs, refinancing options, and lot and construction loans. Making home happen wherever you are. First Federal Bank and Trust, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Good morning and welcome to Public Pulse. This morning, I'm already engaged in some pretty interesting conversation with the Museum at the Bighorns Executive Director, Danielle Stuckel. Good morning, Danny. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
How are you?
Good. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. I'm looking forward to no snow, actually.
Yes, me too.
I know it was a light winter, but spring is still my favorite time of year, and I'm just hoping that she's finally arrived.
Yes.
Now, the museum is currently closed, preparing for a very large move to the downtown district of the city. But you do have at least one program still going strong, and that's History Happy Hour. How's that been?
It's been going really well for us. When we first talked about doing it, my goal was to have this really small, intimate conversation, really just like sitting around a campfire, having a beer, having a really relaxed conversation with a bunch of friends about local history. Stories that you remember growing up with, things that maybe your dad or grandpa told you or your grandma told you a story. That was the vision. And we haven't had one yet that's really been that small and intimate. They've all been way bigger than I expected to be. Yeah. And it can be challenging to manage a conversation when you get such a big audience, which is one of the reasons why I wanted them to be smaller. You can have a more natural, organic conversation. Yeah. It's easier for people to take turns talking. And then when you get a real big audience, one of the things that happens is sometimes you'll have one or two people who are the big talkers and monopolize the conversation, and then everybody else sits there quietly. And then it's not that conversation I wanted where people are telling stories and sharing.
Yeah.
But we have had audiences that have been really engaged. They've really wanted to come and ask questions or share something that they remember about a community, or, just have an opportunity to ask other people, what do you remember about this building? Or I'm new to the area. I don't know what my business has been used for over the years. I know it was a house for a while. What else happened there?
Oh, that's an interesting idea. Yeah.
So that's been something that's still been able to come through even though the groups have been larger. And that was really exciting for me to see that dynamic, because that's what we wanted.
You know, that's something that's pretty fascinating. When you go and buy a piece of property in a new area, you move your family in, and you tend to wonder what's happened here.
Yeah.
On this plot of land that I have now.
Yeah.
And I never really thought about it, but that's an ingenious idea to go to one of these conversations and just start asking questions about your property.
Yeah.
Maybe learning quite a bit.
Well, that was one of the things. We just had one in Story, and it was really exciting. We had, I think there was a few more than 50 people there, about 52 or 53 of us. And we met in the library, and great dynamic. The audience really shared,
mm-hmm.
and had a nice pattern to the conversation. Nobody really dominated unless they were asked to tell more of a story, tell a deeper story about this topic. So it was just a great natural flow. And that's a lot of what people talked about, was the history of different buildings in the community, different businesses, where were different ranches located, where has the post office been located over the years, and where has the different hotels and restaurants been located. And that was some of the questions that people had were, what was my building used for over the years? And it can be really difficult to find that information out, especially if you're in a smaller community where there hasn't been a repository for documents or archives. You really have to find people who've been in the area for a long time and can tell you, oh, yeah, I remember when so-and-so lived there. It's hard to track that information down. Even when you live in a bigger city like Sheridan, it can still be hard to track that information down. Can you go to City Hall and actually find these records?
Yeah.
Who has this information? So that was something that I was really excited to see, is people having an opportunity to ask their questions, knowledgeable local people in the area being able to share what they know and what they remember. It was a great opportunity to see that happen.
And you know, there's small communities that have risen and fallen around us that we may not even realize.
Yeah.
This used to be a bustling community. My father took me on a drive, as he calls them, get in the car, we're going somewhere, in the truck, we're going somewhere. Drove me up to the mountains over near, it was somewhere in Star Valley. I couldn't lead you there to this day. But he drove us up into the mountains pretty far, and then we walked quite a ways. And there's all these dilapidated buildings. And mm-hmm. Dad said, this used to be a gold mine.
Yeah.
And there were people all over here at one time.
Yeah.
And now it's just completely forgotten about.
Yeah.
I can remember specifically going into a building and finding just blue and clear bottles. You know, those old bottles that we used to use for all kinds of different things. And man, I took home a treasure trove of old bottles that day. But it was pretty incredible. And things like that, you know, are all over Wyoming.
Yeah.
Communities rose and fell overnight.
Yeah.
And so it's great to have these opportunities to be able to sit down with people who may remember that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
How my dad learned about that, I have no idea. He was probably up there with his horse one day and just kind of came across it and then went to town hall, I guess we could say, and looked that up to figure out what the heck he'd stumbled into more than likely.
Well, and it's so easy to lose that information. I don't know if you've seen some of those. The History Channel for a while had a really interesting show. I don't know if they still do, but it was about how fast buildings decompose when people abandon them. And it's really interesting. We spend so much time and effort maintaining our buildings just to keep them livable. If you leave for 10 years, things really fall apart quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And people lose that information very quickly. They don't share it. It's not something they always talk about. And if you're not talking about that stuff, it gets lost. My visitor services coordinator, Chip King, at the Story event kept, and our board member, Greg Lumen, who was there too, they both kept reminding the audience that if we don't talk about this stuff, it's lost. If we don't write it down, it's lost. If we don't have these conversations, it's just gone.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was one of the things that I thought was really a positive outcome of what we were doing, is people were just sitting down and talking about all of these things.
And finding history.
Yeah.
I mean, finding the history. in the memories and the stories.
And that's what I'm always going for also. I'm a professional historian. I've been academically trained in this area, but you don't have to have my background to be interested in history. You don't have to have my background to be able to do historical research or historical writing or share that in some way. There's a program for kids called History Day, which is a lot like a science fair, and the kids can do an exhibit or a paper or a documentary or a website or a public performance. And I love the program because these kids are learning all the different ways you can share history. And people often think, well, I don't have a museum. How would I have an exhibit? Well, you don't have to have a museum to be able to organize some photos and share that. There's lots of ways. Now with social media, there's lots, and people have websites and blog posts. There's so many ways to share this information and record it. So that was one of my goals, is for people to see, no, we really can do this work also. We don't have to be a historian to be interested in local history, to record it, to share it. This can happen organically among people who are just interested.
And, you know, certain family members may have that gift. I've got a cousin who has really studied up on the Whiting family history. Mm-hmm. So we've got that all the way back to Denmark.
Oh, nice.
And in that area over there. And it's just fascinating to sit down and see where your ancestors had come from.
Yeah.
You know, and wonder how the heck did we get from there?
Yeah.
To here.
Yeah.
And it's great to see that. I got another aunt who, she does the same thing on the other side of the family, and she's found certain roots all the way back to, I think it was 1650 or something around.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's just amazing to sit down with that history. And speaking about sitting down with history, as I mentioned before, the museum is relocating to downtown Sheridan. Now, with more than 30,000 items to preserve and pack all the way across town, this is a massive undertaking. It's going to be finished by the spring of 2025. Danny, that seemed like a long time, not very long ago.
Yes.
But looking at the clock, you're running out of time. Like, this is incredible.
Right. Well, you know, I was just explaining to somebody this morning all of the dominoes that have to fit in the right place. And there's a lot of things that we don't have any control over. So we're waiting for other people to do their part of the project. And if they have a holdup on their end, you know, there's just this whole line of dominoes that we can't always do much about. And do we have a plan B? If this piece doesn't happen when it's supposed to, what are we going to do instead of that for a workaround? So it's just a lot of, we're doing some hurrying up and waiting. Mm-hmm. and just a lot of planning, contingency plans. What happens if we... have this problem? What happens if we have that problem? It's a lot of moving parts and a lot of juggling, but we're getting there. We did a full inventory of the collection, which was remarkable in itself. Any museum professional will tell you that's a big project all on its own. So we've done an inventory. There's still parts of that we're working on. We have things in the collections that we're recording numbers on. We're trying to gather more stories about them. We're trying to figure out where they might fit into the new exhibits. Are there gaps in what we've been collecting that we need to share with the community? You know, we really don't have anything about this area. We'd like to have more things about ranching. We want to do more about ranching in the exhibit, but we don't have these particular items that would help tell that story. So those are some of the things we're working on right now. It's just... you know, it kind of depends on what day you show up and what contractor is available and what volunteer is available. And this is the project we're doing today.
I'll tell you what, though, if I was staff, that would kind of be somewhat fun. I mean, we do want to get everything done, but not knowing what we're going to do today until I show up and get that meeting in the morning.
Yes.
I just kind of enjoyed that.
Yeah. The same things I love and hate. The same things about the job. It is really frustrating to be able to plan things out and make sure everything happens the way it's supposed to be when you don't always know what's going to happen. But I also really like that variety. I'm not the kind of person who, I don't really want to sit in the corner of a basement and catalog 50 spoons all day. I really like that variety of, I never know for sure what's going to happen in the day, and somebody will call us or walk through the door and all of a sudden I'm off on a project that I never even thought of. And I really like that aspect of the job.
Yeah, absolutely. Having that, I don't know, you could see it as like an adventure.
Yes.
Because you never know what's going to come up next.
Yes. I mean,
and we're going to talk a little bit more on that when we return. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE at 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
The Bighorn Home Builders Home and Garden Show was another huge success, thanks in part to all the vendors and the community. First Federal was proud to be a major sponsor again. We hope you got a lot of ideas for this spring and summer. Let the team at First Federal Bank and Trust help you achieve your dream of home ownership. We offer a variety of loan programs, refinancing options, and lot and construction loans. Making home happen wherever you are. First Federal Bank and Trust, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Making time for appointments during regular business hours can be a challenge.
That's why this spring at Sheridan Memorial Hospital, we're expanding hours for outpatient imaging.
Whether you need an MRI, CT, X-ray, or mammogram, appointments will soon be available during extended evening hours and Saturday mornings.
As the needs of the community change, Sheridan Memorial Hospital will continue growing for you.
To learn more about the expanded hours for outpatient imaging, go to SheridanHospital.org or call 307-672-1045.
Moss Holders wants you to begin sleeping better this spring. So right now, every mattress is on sale, and one lucky customer will win a brand new Serta or Simmons Beautyrest mattress. Every customer that comes into Moss Holders can enter for a chance to win the mattress of their choice. But even if you're not the lucky customer, you can still find your favorite mattress and save on every purchase. Not only that, but you'll get even bigger savings on all sheets, mattress protectors, pillows, and adjustable foundations. That's Moss Holders Mattress Giveaway going on now. Moss Holders, furniture is our passion.
McTeacher Night is this Thursday at McDonald's on Coffeen Avenue, benefiting Woodland Park Elementary. That's right, this Thursday, April 25th, from 5 to 8 p.m., come into McDonald's on Coffeen Avenue, have a great meal, and then a portion of the proceeds will benefit Coffeen Elementary. You'll be served by some of your favorite teachers, administrators, and, of course, the great McDonald's team. McTeacher Night, this Thursday, April 25th. 5 to 8 p.m. benefiting Woodland Park Elementary School. McTeacher Night will be at the Coffeen Avenue location only.
This public service announcement sponsored by Pilch Engineering, providing environmental engineering services to Wyoming.
Hi, I'm Lydia.
I'm Lindsay.
I'm Emmy.
We are proudly representing the Bighorn High School Theater Department.
Our team has the opportunity to travel to Indiana to compete at the National Thespian Festival in June, and we are seeking funding to help us get there.
If you are able to help, please send any donations to Bighorn High School. If you have any questions, please call 674-8190.
Thank you so much for your consideration. We are looking forward to representing the Sheridan and Bighorn communities on the national stage.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm Floyd Whiting, and this morning I'm speaking with Museum at the Bighorns Executive Director Danielle Stuckel. For the next few months, museum staff and volunteers will continue to move the collection, which contains more than 30,000 objects, to a new location in downtown Sheridan. Now, before the break, we were talking about getting sidetracked. Maybe I talked about that during the break. When going through all the items, I would be horrible down there because I'd find every little item and spend it way too much time trying to figure out what it is. Who did this belong to? Have you found anything that just surprised the heck out of you?
We have found a lot of interesting things. And one of the unfortunate pieces is it's really hard to track down stories of some of these items. One of the things that happens to museums, especially in the past when we were struggling to become more professionalized as an industry, people would drop things off. You might not even have any idea who dropped it off. You might show up for work and there's a box of stuff at the front door and you have no idea where it came from and there's no notes in it where it came from. So museums have these things in their collections where we really don't have a good story. We really don't know where it came from. And that's always a challenge. What can we figure out about this object? Is there a way we can, you know, reverse engineer this project and figure out where this might have come from? Who in town at this time period might have been getting rid of military things.
Yeah.
It's hard to do that. It's really challenging, but it's the way that we can get at stories to tell about these objects that we might not know otherwise. And how can we tell a story? We don't know where this came from. We don't know who used it, but we know it was used in World War I. Is there still a way we can create a story that we can share with people that we don't know what this particular item, who used it, but this is how they were used historically. And so there's still ways to come at this, these objects and tell stories, but having, being able to capture where it came from and who used it is so integral to what the work that we do.
It really personalizes.
Yes.
It, doesn't it?
Those stories are what connect people. The object itself is just a piece of something. It's just material. It's a piece of wood. But if you know that, you know, this was a wooden shoe that came from the Netherlands, you know, who brought it here? Was it a souvenir from a trip? Was you know, something an immigrant brought here with them? Was it the spoils of war? Who knows? How can you figure that out? That's where the exciting things happen. That's where people make connections, and that's what makes the object valuable. And that's what we're working on right now, is going through the, through these boxes of stuff and trying to figure out, how can we take this item and explain something important about our community? How does this explain the people who've lived here? And how does it connect those people to the people who live here now? There's no way to really get at understanding nameless, faceless people from 200 years ago. But once you have these objects and you learn the stories about them, then all of a sudden you know that, you know, Clara Smith had this amazing story. You know, she had five children and raised them by herself. That's exciting to know, and that's what we're trying to get at. That's where people start to care about history, start to feel that history is relevant to them, start to identify with the larger community. Museums have a really important role in helping create a sense of community and helping people feel connected to each other, which is a huge problem in this day and age. Everybody knows that social media has helped destroy the social fabric of our communities. And people feel more lonely than they've ever felt before. There's studies that show how people are really struggling with loneliness today. And the work that the museum does can help bring us back together and connect the people of the community. And all these different individuals, why do you live in Sheridan? Well, when you discover that, oh, this is why everybody else lives here too, we all have this in common, that's when we really come together as a community and have this comprehensive sense of place that we share.
It's amazing how sharing struggle can unify a group of people.
You start to realize that this isn't just me. Yeah. Other people are dealing with this. It's really important for being able to get to know people and feel connected to them.
And when you know their story, you can celebrate their victories right alongside.
Yeah.
Because we've all had those struggles and those victories in our own lives.
Yeah.
And it really makes history so personal.
Yes.
When you can identify with just, and this could just be some random object. You know, my wife and I were watching some videos last night, and she'd never seen a candle timer before.
Oh, yeah.
And so she's like, oh my gosh, that's genius.
Yeah.
And she said, of course you would need those, but you never think about it.
Yeah.
And there's some very elaborate, beautiful pieces that are out there.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, we don't know, but these little things were probably on the candles of like children. Because, you know, they'd fall asleep with the candle on and, oh, who knows? Everyone knows what kind of bad things can happen then.
Right.
But it just makes an object more personal. Otherwise, it's just, well, yeah, that's what this was used for.
Yeah.
And it's kind of an empty thing. And it also makes me think of, like, military medals. I got a family member who has military medal from service of a family member in the Civil War. When you look at this thing, it's pretty tarnished.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you think, oh, yeah, it's a medal. But then you learn the story behind it. And all of a sudden, fires in your chest.
Yes.
And I joined the military partly because when I was a little kid, I saw that medal. I heard the story. This is a family legacy.
Yeah.
We serve. And it's great. It made such a big impact on me to know those things. Now, moving on down the line, how has the search for a design firm come along?
It's really an interesting and complicated process. There are companies all over the United States of different sizes that this is what they do, is build museum exhibits. And they do work for other industries. Sometimes they're also working for, you know, theme parks or the movie industry. Some of the larger companies do a variety of work, but there's a lot of small firms. They maybe only have, you know, less than five people that they just come in and build an exhibit. And I had a board member ask, you know, why we have professional staff, why would we need to even hire anybody? Well, it's very specialized work. You have to know specialized software. A lot of times exhibit designers use like CAD software, like architects would use, which is way beyond my capabilities.
Oh, man, yeah. I imagine they went to college to learn how
to
do that stuff.
Yeah, and then you have people on a team who have expertise in design and people who have expertise in interpretation and storytelling, and then people who have expertise in actually constructing objects and elements for the exhibit. So you have a team who know how to do all these different things that our staff don't have the time and knowledge to do. We can have really nice exhibits at a more cost-effective, faster, reasonable way than if staff had to do it ourselves.
Yeah.
And so when we're hiring these firms, there's this process where we're right now at the phase where we're sending out, it's an RFQ. That can mean different things in different industries. For us, it means request for qualifications. And it's basically, we're just asking firms, are you interested in this project? Show us your resume. What kind of projects have you worked on before that are similar to this? Tell us why you're interested in this, how you would be able to have a unique product that our audiences would resonate with. So it's an opportunity. The firms don't have to do a full proposal, which is complicated, and they don't want to do a full proposal, understandingly, if they're competing with 20 other firms. But mm-hmm. if they know they're in the top three, they'll spend a lot more time on a proposal because they know that the competition is smaller and they have a better shot of getting the job. So we start with this just to make it easier for everybody. It's a way to feel out, are you interested in this? So we're waiting to get responses to that. I've had a few firms contact me with questions about the project, what our timeline is, what our budget is. And then as soon as we get those back, then we'll narrow it down to who we're actually going to ask for a full proposal from. And we'll probably have somewhere between 3 to 5 firms that we invite to submit a proposal. And that's the exciting part that I love, where we start to see their ideas.
Yeah.
Obviously, I have a lot of ideas of what I'd like to see happen. And I've been working in museums for a long time. I've been to a lot of museums. So I do have a lot of ideas. But the great part about this process is these people have also been working in a lot of different museums, and they have a lot of great ideas. So how do we get together and work on what our specific project is going to look like? What are the artist renderings and conceptions of what this could look like? And that is so much fun. It's my favorite part of the process, thinking about, oh, this is what it would look like. This is what the interactive element for kids might look like. I love that part of it. So we're getting to this point where it's starting to feel more real and more exciting.
Yeah.
A little overwhelming. There's just so many moving parts that we have to get right. But this is the fun part.
Now, I'm running out of time with you, but I do want you to throw out a pitch here for an educator because you're looking for one.
Yes. We need somebody who is interested in doing some programming for us in the next year so that we can stay in front of the community, that they know we're still here, we're still doing stuff. I have a job description that will be posted on our website within the next few days. This week, we'll have more information online about what that looks like.
All right. But if you happen to really love history and want to go out there and educate the public, keep an eye on the museum at the Bighorn's website. Something is on the way. Danny, I want to thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you for having me back.
It is always a pleasure. All right. When we come back, we're going to speak with the Sheridan Colleges of Theater and Dance. Stay with us. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE at 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
The Bighorn Home Builders Home and Garden Show was another huge success, thanks in part to all the vendors and the community. First Federal was proud to be a major sponsor again. We hope you got a lot of ideas for this spring and summer. Let the team at First Federal Bank and Trust help you achieve your dream of home ownership. We offer a variety of loan programs, refinancing options, and lot and construction loans. Making home happen wherever you are. First Federal Bank and Trust, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Mark April 26th on your calendars for something truly special. Join Compass Center for Families at the historic Sheridan Inn for the annual Light of Hope Breakfast, a gathering of hearts and hands dedicated to making a difference in Sheridan County. This year, they are recognizing the Sheridan County YMCA as their champion for children. And the best part, it's absolutely free. RSVP by calling Compass Center for Families or emailing Andrea at compass4families.org.
The 6th annual Forever West Extreme Bulls Bull Riding event is coming to Buffalo May 18th at the Johnson County Fairgrounds. There are plenty of opportunities for you and your business to be a partner through marketing opportunities that include free tickets, your logo on the replay screen, the website and social media site with over 1.4 million followers. Contact Sarah, 307-751-6320. That's 751-6320 to be part of Forever West Extreme Bulls 2024.
You hear that? Why, that's the sound of your lawn not getting mowed right. Those blades are out of kilter, and that carb is set to choke instead of yodel. You have to add air to your mower tires every time you use it? Well, that's not good for the environment. Using up all that air causing global warming? Hendo Service Center can take the hickey up out of your giddy up and have that mower running smoother than Tennessee whiskey. Hendo Service Center, located on Sheridan's Heartland Drive.
Live music and dancing are back for a second round. Swing into Sheridan is back with another live music event for all ages at the Sheridan Inn. It's something fun and safe for everyone. The upcoming show is April 26th, featuring Brandon James and the Yehus. The cost is just $10 a person, so swing into Sheridan with the music of Brandon James and the Yehus, Friday, April 26th, 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. at the historic Sheridan Inn, sponsored in part by our friends at Sheridan Media.
And welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting. My guests for the second part this morning are Sheridan College Director of Theater, Dr. Lauren Graffin Estrada, and Sheridan College Dance Instructor, Stephanie Koltiska. Good morning, ladies, and welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having us. We're happy to be here.
Good morning.
It's great having you guys come in. I love talking to creative people, and you both have got some pretty big things coming up. Now, before I go, though, Doc, how has the semester been going over in the theater department?
Awesome. We've got a really wonderful bunch of students, so it's always just a pleasure to spend time with them all. I feel really lucky that that's my job.
Oh, can you pull that mic just a little closer? I'm getting a signal from James. He's Now, when it comes to theater, you know, a lot of people tend to think about things like beatry or perform in this manner in front of your colleagues, your peers. Yeah. What is the purpose behind those simple exercises?
How we perform in space, you mean?
Yeah.
Like how, well, I think you see it this semester. So we're back on proscenium arch, and last semester we were in the studio space. The one before that we were performing in the rind. So I think each space that you move to, you have to change your performance style.
Really?
Because there's different requirements dependent on the space. So if you perform in proscenium arch, which is our typical kind of picture frame stage, you often have to perform at 45 degree angles. You know, you'll probably have heard the phrase cheat out, where you have to play out to the audience a lot more. You have to usually perform in diagonals because the people here on the left and the right in the audience won't see you otherwise, right? So we have to play a lot more with angles. That's why you might notice in proscenium arch sometimes the movement doesn't always look entirely natural. And it's because of how the space is shaped, and you have to think about what the audience sees, what their sight lines are. So you perform in a different style, really.
And emote, right?
I don't know. It has to be a pretty big space for you not to I always push back against that because I know students often get taught that they have to do things bigger. And I'm like, I actually don't think that's necessary. The YO is big, but not that big. That actually comes from, I think, from the history of melodrama, which is where the proscenium arch really kind of originates around the period of melodrama. Yeah. So that seems to have continued throughout time, but I actually don't think that's necessary because they also had terrible lighting when melodrama was invented, right? So a very specific makeup and a need for everything to be larger because we really couldn't see. We don't really or shouldn't really have that problem in 2024 in a theater. So
now, Stephanie, is the same space usage applied in dance? Because I mean, you've danced on some huge stages,
right?
And you've danced on some very small stages. How does the space change the performance?
Well, I think as dancers, we definitely have to take into consideration the space that we're working within and how big or small that movement will be. But what's interesting about dance is, for instance, the show that I just, my department just did, we actually were not performing necessarily with this idea of cheating out, which is super common. You hear that all the time. We had a completely different concept in mind, and that concept was the story was about us. And you got to come and see that story, but it wasn't necessarily us performing for you, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
We were in it together. We were doing something that was about this relationship. So I think dance is a little bit different, mm-hmm. that we're not using words to tell our story. We're using our movement and our bodies. So there are times when we can make decisions that maybe aren't always the normal.
Conventional.
Right. I think that both Lauren and I like to push the boundaries a little bit on what is seen and what we're doing. And so, definitely the movement changes and we have to be aware of where we are. But I don't think that we always have to perform in a way that's specifically out and presentational to the audience. You can come and experience something that's a little bit more intimate. And that does change like the facing of our bodies while we're on stage.
And I love the fact that you said that the two of you like to push those boundaries because as educators, that's what I would expect as your student. Okay, here's our line.
Yeah.
Let's cross it. Let's figure out how we can how we can jump across it. And I had a great teacher once tell me in English, before you write as a character who might not be able to speak too well, you need to know the rules before you start breaking them.
Yeah.
Because then you know, I can break this rule or I can bend that and it's still all cohesive. Yeah. And I could see that in a performance in a play and especially with dance where sometimes that decision has to be made in a split second during a performance and it enriches it 1,000%. So I really love the idea we're educators. I'm going to teach you the rules, but then I'm going to teach you where we can bend and break them.
And I think that comes with the planning of each kind of cycle of students that we have, right? We have them for 2 years. So we always make sure that we, for example, in theater, we have a musical that we perform in proscenium arch, that we have that training. But it's also really important as we go out throughout this season that we look at other performance modalities. Otherwise, you come out, you know, if you consistently perform in proscenium arch for 4 semesters, you know, your training is limited, right? Mm-hmm. So
yes.
We have to play in different spaces. We have to play with different performance styles. So there's always kind of a strong variation in the work that we do. I think both of us.
Absolutely.
And by the time you throw that degree in my hand, I can go anywhere, play anywhere, perform on any size of a stage, because I've already done it.
That's what we hope for.
Yeah,
that's
goal.
The game plan,
yeah.
Right? All right, now let's take a look at what's coming up. Can you tell me what the BW Creative is?
Sure. So fall semester, I invited a guest artist in residence to come and spend a week with my students. So in fall of 23, Brandon Welsh came out and he taught, him and his wife actually taught master classes and did all sorts of wonderful things with all of my students. But my dance majors spent a few extra hours each day with him. They were in rehearsal 4+ hours every day the whole time he was here. And he created a brand new work on my students.
Oh, wow.
That was to be performed when his company shows up this week. So my dancers actually get to dance on stage with his company side by side with professionals. It's something I'm really excited for them to get that experience. So BW Collective is Brandon Welsh and his company. They're located in Denver, Colorado. Brandon and I have known each other for a very long time. We met in New York. We both were going to school out there. And he has just slowly grown this beautiful company. And I'm excited that he got to come here and share some of his work with my students.
What kind of dance are we going to see?
So it's definitely on the contemporary side, modern. It's modern dance for sure. But that word is definitely, it's, I don't know. Modern dance can be interpreted in many different ways. I would say his work leans more towards the contemporary side. It's very beautiful classical music for the most part. And his movement is very fluid and tells a gorgeous story. It's fun to do, extremely fun to do, and beautiful and enjoyable to watch.
Now, how will the students take part? Are they just literally part of the entire production from beginning to end, or will there be like two or three songs?
No, he taught them, I believe their piece is around 7 minutes. So he taught them a piece that he is inserting into his show. So it's his whole company, but there is a section that his other dancers also perform before and after, is my understanding. But my college students will find out this week when he arrives tomorrow. And we jump in with this piece that we have been working on without him for this entire year, basically. And they're prepared and ready to rock and roll. So they will jump in doing this one piece, and it'll be intertwined into what he's already doing.
Is there a lot of room for interpretation during something like this? Or is it one of those situations where you kind of get the information on how we need to move, where, when, how we need to dance, and you stick to it as close as you can?
Yes and no. I mean, I think it would be different if we were working with somebody that I didn't know. But Brandon and I, like I've done with other choreographers that have come in and done similar things, we've stayed in contact all year. We've talked about, he's given me notes on how he wants me to rehearse the dancers. But there's also a trust between Brandon and I, because we have worked together in the past on trusting me that I wouldn't manipulate his work in a way that he wouldn't be happy with. So I held on, we held on to his choreography like crazy. We rehearsed it in the way that he asked us to, which was actually to not over rehearse it. He wanted it to remain as real as possible and in the moment. So it's another sort of idea that the performance is about the dancers and their story changes every time. And yeah, it's been a wonderful process.
That is really interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see like mechanical dance.
Yeah.
I want to see that natural.
And that's
flow.
What this is for sure.
That's fascinating.
And what's interesting is every time we rehearse this piece, there still hasn't been a time that I haven't seen something different happen and gotten a little bit teary-eyed because of how connected they are and really into the movement that he's given and set on them. It's been a really cool thing to watch.
Now, Stephanie, I don't want to get off into the weeds too much, but I do want to talk about and get your insight on how you feel dance can ignite social change.
Oh my gosh. That's more of a Lauren question. I think that art is so important in general. And I think we all need to have an outlet to express ourselves. And I think if we're able to have a safe place to do that and a place for people to come and watch and start to feel something themselves and start to question, I think that's a good start. I had somebody make a comment to me for my last show. I realized that for the first time in a long time, I actually felt how I was feeling, and I hadn't done that in a long time. And so I think simple things like that, allowing people to come and just sit and experience something, opens up the doors for communication and, just the chance to be able to talk about things that maybe
don't come up in everyday conversation.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And I think it's not just a start. Mm-hmm. If you really think about it, that's the goal, isn't it? Open up communication.
Right.
I had a high schooler recently ask me a really interesting question. they said to me, Lauren, how do you measure the success of your work? Right?
Oof. That, yeah. Yeah. That's a lot deeper the older we get, isn't it?
So I think this particular student has said they had done some kind of edgier work. A lot of people would think of as being experimental, but actually wasn't very. If you work in the region of arts, it wasn't particularly experimental, but they were saying, you know, that people would say things like, I just don't get it, or and that's the most frustrating phrase you can ever hear. I just don't get it. That's a sign to me that you're just not thinking, or you're not open to getting it, right? Because it didn't fulfill quite what you expected it to. But I thought that was such a great question. And my response was, well, some people will measure it via ticket sales, right? Yeah. How many people came? I said, but you have to really think about whether you want quantity or you want quality in reception. So you might only have 30 people at your show, but what are they thinking about it and what are they saying and how have you changed their perception of the world? Do you want that or do you want 400 people in the audience? And I think I want the first,
yeah.
Which is probably unpopular. But I had someone come a couple of semesters ago. We performed Girls Like That, which was really about being a teenager, a female teenager, and some of the obstacles you face. And I had a parent, Stephanie was there, approached me in a restaurant, and I'd never met them in my life. And they said, hey, were you the director of that show? I said, yeah. And they were like, I want you to know I had really important conversations with my daughter after that show. And I don't know if I could have had them if that hadn't been performed.
Amazing. Wow. Yeah.
You know.
Like Stephanie said, you opened up a communication.
You start a conversation. There's a lot of evidence and research to show that kids that engage in theater and arts regularly have a higher capacity for empathy and a higher ability to look at things from different perspectives. And I think that can be really useful, particularly when things feel very polarized, when you feel like you can't meet someone in the middle, if you have the capacity to try and look at things from an alternative perspective, because that ultimately leads to what you're asking for, which is social change.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I heard someone once tell me, you know, how to be happy. Well, it's the difference between perception and perspective. And as soon as you figure those out, happiness will come along because you'll have a better understanding of the other person and their shoes.
And if your goal is to be right, it's very unlikely you're going to be happy.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. All right, I am running out of time with you. I do want to talk about the 57th National Mathlete Summit, the almost all-girl math musical.
Isn't that a mouthful? Try and say that five times fast. Yeah, so this musical is not, and I don't think, well, I mean, I always find something interesting in terms of social change, but this is really fun, actually, this musical. It's really fun. It's really cute, and it's really nerdy. There's like songs like Outlier, which if you're familiar with math... it's just there's all these kind of like math nerdy jokes in there. So it's just a really fun one. I think it's great for all the family. It's great for anybody that's in middle school and up. I think it'll hold their attention. So it's just one of those shows that you go to for a good time, really. But also explores what it means to be a woman in STEM.
Yeah.
There's always to be some sort of depth in the work that we do.
Is this like a modern perception of that, or is this a past? So where are we now kind of thing?
Yeah, this is a musical about these kids who really want to compete at the national level as mathletes, but it's mostly all girls. So they've never been looked at as real contenders before because it's so rare to have females in the area of STEM. So they sing songs like I Look Like an Engineer, which is kind of a really interesting ballad where they tell you why we as women look like engineers and belong here too. So it's really fun. It's silly. It's cute. But there's also this kind of interesting element where we think about that who belongs in these spaces.
And it's interesting, you know, we talked about opening up communication, but this sounds like something I would have taken my daughter to. And then afterwards... she would have gone out on her own and looked up to see the impacts that women have had on STEM. We wouldn't have made it to the moon without women. We wouldn't have made it into space without women. And I don't think a lot of people understand that. The first time DNA was photographed
was by a
woman.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, their contributions to science and technology are just as great as those of, the more masculine sex.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I've only got 1 minute left. Stephanie, if I want to see your performance, what do I got to do?
So the Brandon Welsh Collective is happening this Thursday, April 25th at 4 p.m. at the Whitney Center for the Arts, Kinnison Hall, and Friday the 26th at 7 p.m., same place. So you'd want to go to the WCA website to purchase tickets for that show. It's going to be a great time.
And Doc, if I want to watch the mathletes?
If you want to come see the numbers nerds, you can come on Saturday at 7 p.m. or Sunday at 1 p.m. and you can purchase tickets at the YO Theater because that's where it's being held.
Ladies, I want to thank you so much for coming in
this
morning.
Thank you.
I love having these conversations with you.
We do too.
All right. You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
The Bighorn Home Builders Home and Garden Show was another huge success, thanks in part to all the vendors and the community. First Federal was proud to be a major sponsor again. We hope you got a lot of ideas for this spring and summer. Let the team at First Federal Bank and Trust help you achieve your dream of home ownership. We offer a variety of loan programs, refinancing options, and lot and construction loans. Making home happen wherever you are. First Federal Bank and Trust, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Whether you're planting a tree or digging a foundation, contact One Call of Wyoming at 1-800-849-2476 or 811. Call 2 business days before you dig. It's free and required by law. Repairs to utilities can be expensive. Cutting a gas line or electrical line can be deadly. No matter if it's weekend yard work or major construction, call One Call of Wyoming at 1-800-849-2476 or 811. Sponsored by Public Service Commission, Wyoming Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
Have you been into Connect Home Center and seen their store remodel? You'll be inspired with all their new displays. And Connect is now an authorized Marvin window dealer. As part of their remodel celebration, you can enter the Connect Home Center Spring Sweepstakes for a chance to win a $300 Connect gift card. Enter for a chance to win on the contest page at SheridanMedia.com now through April 26th. And swing by Connect Home Center at 1836 South Sheridan Avenue in Sheridan for all your spring projects.
You've been procrastinating. Admit it, your car's been needing a tune-up, but you've just been so busy being awesome. How awesome will that summer road trip be when your car breaks down, leaving you stranded? Well, perhaps scheduling an appointment with Midas to get ready for summer driving is a good idea. Midas has savings on brakes, shocks, wheel alignments, transmission service, tune-up, and more. Keep your car running safe, smooth, and longer with a few more coins in your pocket with Midas Tire and Auto in Sheridan.
So is the well you have the water well you wish you had? 307 Wildcat Well Service is a homegrown local well drilling company that knows everything about where your best water is and how to get it to you. So if you want a second well or just to make the well you've got taste better and run stronger, 307 Wildcat Well Service is a local company with a local price. 307 Wildcat Well Service on Facebook or look for their ad in the business directory under Water Wells in the Country Bounty.
Cool, clear water.
Hey there, it's James Timberlake, your friendly host on Swap Chop. Join me every weekday morning at 8:25 a.m. on News Talk 930 and 103.9 FM KROE. Whether you're looking to buy, sell, or trade, Swap Shop is the place to be. It's quick, it's hassle-free, and the results speak for themselves. We also post the Swap Shop listings on SheridanMedia.com. Swap Shop, your go-to destination for all things swapping. Weekdays at 8:25 a.m. on News Talk 930 and 103.9 FM KROE.